You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for, as it's a Thursday, the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Nick Kunzer from Sunland Private Wealth. And I'm going to read you something now, gentlemen. Good evening, by the way. It came from Peter Schiff. It came an hour ago, just after the latest raft of data from the United States of America's economy. It says here, the unemployment outlook is getting bleaker as new weekly jobless claims were not only above 1 million for the 19th consecutive week, but with today's 1.434 million, they are now higher for the second week in a row. The recovery, in inverted commas, he says, has already ended and the relapse has already begun. David Shapiro, over to you first, please, on this tweet, which is quite provocative.
It is provocative because I think what I like about it is that this kind of news is now coming out. You know, we're reaching the end of it. I don't think we're going to go into the next quarter is going to be much better than this. And there's already evidence of it. As you go through the results, you'll find the bounce backs in June, July, whether it's Visa, MasterCard, or any of the businesses, UPS. So I think that the fact that we've got the March, April, May out of the way, I think for me it's a big relief. I'm not saying I'm celebrating today's markets, because as I look at the red on the screen, I say this is a Lindsay market. You know, he's going to absolutely love this.
I don't know what you mean. What are you suggesting?
So I'm saying all your short positions are going to come in.
Oh, I see. Yes, they're coming home to roost.
Up 13%.
What I found interesting as well is that, you know, against the kind of backdrop that we've seen, I would have expected gold and all the other metals and that to kind of shift up a bit, but they went all the other way. Oil slashed, platinum slashed. You know, oh God. Anyway,
so this is where I think it gets so interesting, and I agree with everything that David's saying. Is that first of all, we had that GDP print. And it showed a 2.9% quarterly plunge. I mean, that's levels associated with Great Depression sort of stuff. You know? But then, of course, it could have been worse. I mean, some are calling for a 34% drop. I mean, I saw some numbers closer to 40. And this is why I think we've spoken about on the show that, you know, we're in this sort of reactive market. We're reacting on every single thing. And when you've got everyone canceling guidances and all the rest of it, you know, you're investable time frame is so short at the moment and so reactive. That's why I thought those jobless numbers were quite interesting for me, because that's not the GDP. That's not looking – I mean, you know, the GDP numbers are from a few months ago. I mean, it really is rearview mirror sort of stuff. Whereas the jobless numbers that came out for now, that's a weekly jobless. And we've spoken about how when you go, you know, when you sign on straight away, and it's quite a real-time number. And it's an uptick from last week. So I do think there's – that shouldn't be ignored. And look, we've got all the tech guys coming out, and they're going to post sort of monster earnings in the next sort of 24 hours. But I think that jobless number for me is a little bit of a warning sign that we're far from out of the woods. I mean, not far from what our Fed was saying last night. I mean, the Fed was saying last night. I mean, they were very blunt with the outlook, you know.
They really were. Just one thing on that GDP number. Sorry, David, before we go on. Because this comes from another tweet. There's been some interesting tweets today. And this comes from our dear friend, Wayne McCurry. It says here, US GDP, this is what he says, USA GDP quarter to June, negative 33% on annualized basis, biggest ever by a country mile. Remember, this is annualized. The actual fall is 8%, but the headline number you will see is minus 33%. We will see similar here, talking about South Africa, of course, but worse within the next few weeks. We'll have to watch markets. So, David, maybe you could explain the difference between the number that all the networks put out of 32.9% quarterly fall of GDP and what Wayne is saying, which is 8%. So explain the anomaly there, please.
Well, that's on the basis that you're going to annualize the number. So, I mean, if this continues, this is what it means. It's a three-month period. So I think that, you know, to look at it over a much extended period, that's the number. So it will reverse dramatically in the third quarter, you know, and that will stabilize it. What it's going to be year on year, It's not going to be down 30%, you know, down those kind of levels. Remember, we closed the economy in March,
right.
The whole economy. No one could actually spend, even if they wanted to. Doors were shut. You know, the services numbers were appalling simply because restaurants and hairdressers and everything has been closed. So I, you know what I would, from my point of view, and I just wish markets would actually kind of brush it aside, say, look, let's just stop all this for a couple of months and see, you know, we work on recovery, but we're going to have to look at the real data down the line. And Lizzie, we don't know. I'm not, you know, I'm very nervous of what does lie ahead, whether we can pull out of it in the way that we want to and we can ever get back to pre-pandemic levels. But I think these kind of numbers are actually published to scare, you know, and it's we don't really understand it fully. You know, what I'm trying to say is you can't take a 3-month period and take that as being where this economy is going to be and what it really reflects. This is not Great Depression stuff. Yes, it is in a short time, but I mean, it's not going to last.
What do you think, Nick? When Peter Schiff says the relapse has begun, it's almost like some of the coronavirus cases that I've been watching, and people say, well, I was positive, I tested positive, but everything was fine. And then suddenly things got a lot worse. It's almost like the economy and maybe the markets are going to do the same thing. In other words, the relapse that Peter Schiff was talking about, because the numbers today were bad. Okay, the GDP number was startling, as I said in my tweet, but not a surprise. But the unemployment claims number was a bit of a surprise to me, Nick. What do you think?
Yeah, as I said, I'm intro. I think the unemployment number is a surprise. And I, for me, that's a little bit more real time than, as David said, a sort of snapshot of the GDP of a quarter that, quite frankly, is actually out of date. And you'll see now with the earnings that are around the middle of earnings season, and you'll see the earnings coming out now from Amazon and Alphabet and Facebook tonight as well. But they're going to come out with monster earnings, record earnings. So I think you've got to be very careful to differentiate between I guess, what is the economy, what is the earnings, and what is the stock market? Because the stock market right now is not the economy. It's not the economy. It's a small handful of companies that are making hand over fist, and people are speculating, and but it's not the economy. You know, we saw what the economy was with this GDP print from a few months ago, but I quite frankly, and I speak to both you guys, I don't think anyone really knows where things are, frankly, at the moment.
Of course they don't.
Now, Nick, that's what I'm saying. You know what? You've got to wait a few months. You've got to let the season play out, you know, and then we can reassess it down the line. I think central bankers, governments are very, very nervous. You know, they're exceptionally nervous about what this means and what they're doing, you know, by embarking on the course that they're taking by introducing stimulus packages, I mean, of huge amounts that we've never done before, ever. I think there's a lot of caution behind the scenes, you know, and they're all hoping that this does kick in and also that the virus does play its way out, you know.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
I was going to say, don't underestimate, as you're saying, what these central banks are doing. And and I thought you've seen a historical sort of almost like a shift out of the U.S. dollar. And we've been shouting from the rooftops for the last couple of weeks about beware of this weaker dollar. And I think what we're seeing at the moment, the pound breaking one, the dollar breaking 130 to sterling, the euro as well. Don't underestimate what you saw with the eurozone last week. You know, with that, the COVID-19 rescue package, $750 billion. It wasn't so much the package; it was the fact that every single one of those members who sat at the ECB and sat between every single country for the first time since time began, all agreed, no conditions, no austerity. You know, the Germans didn't demand half of Santorini to be sent over from the Greeks. It was literally, it was a universal acceptance. Then if you look towards what Rishi's doing in the UK, even our South African Reserve Bank are trying to do something. You know what I mean? So it's this massive, the one side, this wave of liquidity that's coming in that certainly, again, tying into my comment that be very careful. The stock market's not the economy. There's a lot of liquidity. And I think the market is primed, I guess, for a little bit of good news. You know, if we come out with some of these stage 3, stage 4 vaccine results that look extremely positive. Do not be caught short this market. That's all I'm saying right now. And look, and I mean, that's just an observation. I mean, I'm not an expert at
this. It's going to happen.
I just get this feeling that the longer we go on, the more people are really wanting this to work on a universal level, which we haven't seen.
Are you getting bullish, Nick Kunzer? Are you getting bullish? This is the question.
I'm not bullish, but
you sound bullish.
I just think from a trading point of view, be careful trying to short this market when you think the world is going to end. And Peter Schiff is saying the second wave is coming, all the rest of it. I look at a GDP print like this, a jobless number, which quite frankly, I don't think was, I'm very nervous of that number. And I see the S&P down 1% like a normal day. Just be careful. Sometimes, again, we've said this before, trade what's in front of you. Look what you're seeing now. That the market's not pricing end of the world in right now by a long
way. I think there's a focus on a cure rather than on the infection rate. In other words, people are far more – don't give me the death count. You know, don't give me that.
Yeah.
Tell me what we're doing.
What's
Tell
the recovery
Pfizer.
Rate?
Yeah. What's Pfizer? Tell me what J&J is doing. You know, they went and tested monkeys, and the monkeys seem to be fine. You know, now let's test people. So those are the stories that are circulating as we're seeing with AstraZeneca and Moderna and so on. So there is this focus. I agree with you. I think everybody says, you know, we're tired of this. We're tired of the
baby. I think we're getting this this 6 month COVID lockdown fatigue. Like, let's concentrate on the good news. And quite frankly, it's not a bad place to be. You know, people are tired of this. They want things to go back to normal. And I think you're gonna see a real. I think you're seeing that in the market. You know, yes, like Peter Schiff saying, yes, some of the stuff's not good. The jobless numbers, I agree, it's a little bit nervous, but. But the market seems to want to find the good news for now, and that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. Let's
have a look at Trump is nervous, hey? You know that?
I'll tell you about Trump later on. One of the most disturbing tweets. One of the most disturbing tweets that I've seen for a while, because he's gone bonkers again. Let's have a look at some Stock Exchange News Service announcements from the JSE Securities. There's a lot today. But the 5 o'clock one that came out since we've been speaking, reviewed financial information for the 9 months ended 31st of March, really, really late, and that's City Lodge Hotels. And I was speaking to a fund manager who about a year ago kept on going on every time I spoke to him about City Lodge and how he liked it, and he came up with some really, really compelling arguments. And of course, he's got absolutely stuffed by the ongoing bad economy even before COVID-19, and then secondly, of course, COVID-19. So the share price today down about 7.25% just ahead of the close. So again, City Lodge, we've spoken about this before, Hans Enderle's legacy. It's a good company, but it's bricks and mortar, and unfortunately, it's stuffed.
Totally. And it's because no one's going there anymore. It wasn't their fault. Suddenly, an operation like this, which we spoke about before, how well it's run, not getting any people through its doors. And like the whole hospitality leisure industry is under enormous pressure. And there's been no relief, Lindsay. I go on about this all the time. This was never meant to be. I think the whole plan about governments was to get you through this period and also give you enough so that when things do get better, you could recover. But the more I talk to businesses, you know, the more I speak to people, the less you find that they're getting in there, you know, the less relief they're getting in order to get them through this. Mm-hmm. And many are just giving up and closing. And that's particularly in the when I say hospitality, particularly in restaurants and places like that, where they just virtually given up and just saying, I've had enough.
And David, I'm right in assuming that if you want to sort of a proxy to the business community in South Africa, I mean, City Lodge is pretty close to that proxy, isn't it? Because I've also fielded a few inquiries on it, and I was trying to work out, I had a client asking me, could I figure out how much of the sort of bricks and mortar they own and all the rest of it. But the more I sort of dug into it, the more until the business economy turns, the City Lodge is going to be in trouble.
It certainly is. So let's have a look at a couple of others as well. And Nick, I'll go over to you on these ones. You can choose one or two from the following list. I've got Anglo-American, small commodity company. AB InBev apparently makes beers. Sappi and MTN. All of those shares in focus today because of results.
Yeah.
Choose the one that you like or dislike, please.
AB InBev, and I'm going to just put a shout out there because we discussed it in length within my esteemed firm I work for, and we said we'll wait till it gets to a certain level. Of course, it reminds you of a saying that a boss that I used to work for, he said, you know, when I was trying to buy a share and I waited, he said, don't be a dick for a tick. And a tick is a word that in financial in futures markets, Lindsay, you would know. I mean, it's you talk about futures being a tick. In other words, just pay up the 1 cent or 5 cents.
Exactly.
Stop waiting. Anyway, going to AB InBev, I actually thought those results were quite pleasing. Very resilient to see what's happening in South America. Obviously, this weaker dollar is going to play right into the hands of emerging markets. On the flip side, though, obviously with the lack of the Olympics and the sporting events, they're going to be in trouble. But I think the market was pricing in quite a bit of Armageddon. And they were quite surprising. And well, look, you know, if you saw the numbers out of Brazil, you know why they've got the COVID cases. Because if you saw those numbers, all they do is drink beer in Brazil. That's all they're doing. But, yeah, very pleasantly surprising set of numbers. Look, they've still got a mountain of debt, and I'm sure David will attest that too. Mm. There's a long way to go. But overall, I would have to say, if you like the emerging market, weaker dollar story, there can be a few places to take a quick look like AB InBev. And I love seeing stocks like this that go up in markets that are going down. That's a very good sign.
But it was up 10%, 12% at one stage, and now it's only up around about 4%, according to my inefficient
exactly,
screen.
But I mean,
it was a knee-jerk, short covering reaction, in my opinion.
Possibly, but I would say if you like that, once again, if you like the emerging market story, you like the weaker dollar, I like the fact that AB InBev was up in a down market like this, and I think it was pleasantly surprising. There's my
I like beer, never mind emerging markets.
They like being in Brazil. They just all got COVID. Oh,
yeah. David, Anglo-American, is that one of yours?
No, but it's a good result. Yes, it's a very good result relative to where they are. I like Kutafani. Yes, production was down and revenue was down because they had to stop some of their mines producing, etc. But they're almost back to where they were pre-COVID. Look, they also had the incidents which we saw in Anglo Platts' results. You know, they had the smelter issue, which is now also going to be behind them. And I think also with metallurgical coal, they also had something. I don't quite remember the incident. Nick can help me there. But overall, a good number. So I think when you look at the absolute numbers, they are down. But I think that a lot of this was already factored in. The one area that worries me is De Beers. I know they bought De Beers from the Oppenheimer family, and the Oppenheimers must be celebrating now.
But you know, I chuckled there because you know when they sold that, when they bought it from the Oppenheimers, and I just thought to myself, you know, these are like 3-4 generations, a century in the business, and they decided to get out.
Yeah,
you know, they're probably not. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Kudos to Nikki and the boys.
Was that Cynthia Carroll? It wasn't Kutafani.
No, Cynthia Carroll. It was Cynthia Carroll.
Exactly, because you know they had it was originally a Rhodes company, and you know they took it over. I mean they maneuvered themselves in and really controlled the diamond industry, the Oppenheimers, and that's why when they sold that out, you knew.
Ring the bell.
It's not sure, and you know what happens. There are so many diamonds around. It's not. Mm. Remember, they used to control the diamonds with the central silicate.
Yeah, that's right. They used to literally have to lock them up in vaults in Antwerp to stop flooding the market. Mm. And the more I'm finding out about I've read the results, you talk about a knock-on effect from this lockdown at COVID-19. Well, the diamond industry is also massively affected because apparently a lot of the business is obviously done through India as well with the polishing. And apparently the knock-on effect of that, there's been no polishing for months. So that lockdown of De Beers and the diamond industry, which you wouldn't think, but it's been affected massively. So, that was a disappointment. But overall, you know, with asset prices where they are outside of the diamond industry, you know, it was a good set of numbers. But I think a lot of it's to be expected.
Okay, let's have a look at the swap prices because the rand is under extreme pressure. It's 2% weaker today. So that was a brief day in the sun, wasn't it? 16.88 is the dollar rand. British pound against the rand is 22 exactly, which is horrible. Euro rand, I mean, it was below 19 a couple of days ago. It's now nearly 20 again. 19.88, a 2.1% fall. Horrible, horrible rand performance today. Euro dollar is 1.1780. So it's not a euro dollar story. It's not a stronger dollar story at all. This is independent rand weakness and independent emerging market weakness. David, off you go.
Lindsay, just do you think this is, and I'm throwing out the question, do you think this was the money that came in from the
IMF.
Sorry, IMF. Do you think that could have affected?
I think it, I think you're absolutely right. It was front running that deal. Well, not maybe the money hasn't come in, but people were hedging on their behalf.
Yeah, that's it.
I think you're absolutely right, David.
Could have affected.
You know, just trade.
I don't know how these things work, whether it's just a journal entry and you've got the money, but or whether it's actually done physically, you know, whether it comes in physically. I'm not sure how these things are negotiated or how they transacted, but there could have been a bit of front running before that. That's now over. And because it just fell from this morning. You know, we were 16.50 last night and 16.90 without exactly as
I don't know about front running, but all I can say is that when the deal was announced, then people start hedging and doing all sorts of things, and then there's a vacuum, because there's been a vacuum from 16.40 to 16.90, and 50 basis points is a really, really big move and very, very significant, and it's actually quite disturbing. And also, Nick, you would know, the currency traders, a little bit of a sort of a clique, aren't they? A little bit of a gentleman's club, so-called, wouldn't you say?
Got to be careful what I say on these recorded live lines.
And no one's listening, don't worry.
It very much is. But, you know, I did a double take there to check whether where sterling was at 132 to the dollar. Because, look, I will say this, that the dollar has been on a one-way train for a while. And I thought today's move in global asset classes today, I thought was a – reasonably textbook. You had, I thought it was a bit of nerves after that initial jobless numbers. There was a bit of risk off. You saw the S&P sell off and you saw things like EM currencies go. And on the back of that, you saw the weaker gold price. And for me, that's usually a sign also that you get your flight to quality and you get your flight to cash. And I actually heard, I said to a client the other day, I said, just be very careful trying to write off when things go really pear-shaped very quickly, like nerves step in. Be careful that people don't run back to the dollar quite quickly, because it's been a one-way bet for 10 days. So I think there's a little bit of maybe that coming in today. But you're right. I mean, just looking now, is a large portion of this move is Rand move. It's not just the weaker dollar. So I think you guys could be right on that. Maybe it's a bit of front running.
And the gold price, despite the fact that the euro dollar is unchanged, the gold price has taken it on the chin today. It had to happen, of course. It's down around about $30 to $1,940 an ounce. The platinum price is getting clattered. I mean, royally down nearly 6%, $55 an ounce down to $885. Palladium, Nick, obviously the same.
Yeah, clattered part two, also down 5%, $110, $2,050 an ounce.
Yeah, commodities really getting it in the neck today. And in the neck is crude oil. West Texas down 3.5%.
Yeah, that was the big one for me.
Yeah, 39.81. It's broken 40. Where Brent crude, $42.54, down 2.75%. Yeah, it doesn't... I think after what Jerome Powell said, people are saying, well, you know what, let's get out of these industrial metals when it comes to palladium and platinum. And other people are saying, well, I'm going to pay my margin calls on other things by getting out of my gold position, which was overextended anyway. Something's going on there.
Yeah, I know the reason.
It's Goldman Sachs. They came out today and said that gold's
2,200, was it?
2,300.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Giant vampire squid.
That was the end. They called as soon as they came out with their.
Ring the bell.
Ring the
so well until they send that note. No, but I do think I think you're spot on there, Lindsay. I think also there's a little bit when you do have these sort of big moves in other commodities, gold's had such a run. And the margin requirements, funny enough, on gold are actually not that generous. So, you know, if you want to lighten up in your gold and prop up the others, that's probably what we're seeing now.
But it'll come back. This is a buy the dips market, as we know, because it's been in a bull market for a long time.
I can't remember where you are, Lindsay. Long or short?
No, I'm not.
He's up to his eyeballs.
No, I'm not. I haven't. I've got the VIX. I've got the NASDAQ. I've got Facebook. And I've got the South African government bond. I've ignored gold, despite the fact it's the one that I've called the most accurately.
We all don't own it.
I must say, last night I was listening to Jerome Powell, and he was very somber, very measured. And you could see under a lot of pressure trying to understand the market and trying to understand the economy. And then they switched to Congress, where You've got four of the most successful businesses in the United States. Really something, you know, champions of the U.S. economy, champions of the capitalistic system. And there you've got Congress trying to beat them down. These are the chaps who are making money at a time where Jerome Powell is so worried about having to create more stimulus. These companies do not need stimulus. And yet you've got Congress, particularly the Democrats in the state, wanting just to wipe them out. And I said, just leave them. Just focus on some other issues. Focus on getting the economy back into shape, etc. You can start to worry about antitrust a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, once other issues. But no, got to make a name for themselves.
Jeff Bezos was quite funny because he's not used to this. I mean, as a commentator was saying, no one's even heard his voice before. I mean, unless you've been at an Amazon AGM or something. And they said he had this beautiful speech prepared to introduce himself and how he'd had a tough childhood and this, this, and this. And it was quite well received. And then they said that with these Congress people asked him questions and said, like, if I open an account at Amazon, do I have to have this detail and that detail? And he just said, I don't know. I'm not sure. He didn't know. He didn't know about the day-to-day operations of this business. He should do, but I mean, I thought it was quite amusing. Okay, Dow Jones, S&P, and Nasdaq, please, Nick Kunze.
Okay, so look, we're off the lows. The S&P did briefly break through 3,200 at double O level, but we have bounced back almost 1% now. So we're down 1% overall, 3,220. That's the S&P 500. Dow Jones, pretty much the same, down 1% as well. Still trading 2,620. So I'm saying it's not a bad number. And the Nasdaq is a little bit worse ahead of the big tech numbers, down 1.2% at the moment, or 321 points. So, I mean, look, you guys, you know, we've all been so negative and saying, talking about this and that. Yeah, down 1% in the market is, it's a normal day.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah. Let's have a look at the JSE now. That share Europa, which we spoke about the other day, that's down 70% today. And it's 22% of the views on one particular.
And I know a little bit about that, which I cannot divulge on air.
Why not?
People I know. So there was a misdeal there, funny enough. So there was a misdeal, and the person on the other side of that misdeal – well, sorry, let me get this right. Sorry, let me correct it.
Go on.
There was a deal – the transaction went through down under under one rand a share. And the person who was due to deliver the stock who sold it basically failed, couldn't deliver it. So it's quite unusual to have a failed trade on the JSE, to be quite honest. But, of course, someone got a sniff of it, pushed the price up 1,000%. And we're talking millions.
Because they have to go into the market and
we're
get
talking
the shares.
Millions. And I happen to know the gentleman involved. I don't want to say too much, but someone's going to have to honor it because it was a transaction that was done and the seller couldn't deliver it.
Surely there should be some
arbitration
here, though.
Yeah, I know.
But the JSE are talking about cancelling it, which I think would be unfair.
They will. Yes, I think so.
No, they will. They will come in and intervene. In a situation like that, you know, especially if there was a failed trade, because obviously you're taking advantage of
the
situation.
But isn't the clearinghouse obligated to? So this particular person bought the share from someone, right? Then of course the share started running, and then the person couldn't deliver it. Sort of T+3 didn't deliver, and then people got a sniff of it in the Fricker Road water coolers, and they pushed the share up, you know, 1,000%.
I think the stock exchange tries to make it fair. If it was a failed trade, they say, okay, we're going to open it up, we're going to hold an auction in which you can try and buy the shares. They don't mind if it goes up a little bit, but where you take advantage of it, you know, in other words, where you take advantage of someone's in a position, I think then they do intervene. You know, so they don't mind you paying up. You made a mistake. You couldn't, whatever the reason is, a lot of mistakes happened.
Especially electronic markets.
Yeah, but not to lose millions in that.
And so anyway, that's the background to that story. So it's quite interesting. So we can watch. I'll give you guys an update when I hear it. I believe they're still fighting over it.
Okay. Anyway, outside of Europa, down 70% today. We've got RB Platinum up 5.4%. AB InBev just under 4% higher, having been, I think, at one stage 12% higher on the opening. Pan African Resources up 3%. RCL Foods up nearly 3%. And Redefined up 2.4% on the downside. Sappi looks a bit soppy, actually. It's down nearly 13%. Yeah. Vivo down 9 1/3. PSG down 6.4%. Life Healthcare 6.1% to the downside. And in the red, to the tune of nearly 6%, Old Mutual. Either of you got any other stocks outside of those that have caught your eye?
Yeah, I want to mention, and David has mentioned before, I think we spoke about it briefly, wondering why that it's unfairly sort of not around. But, I mean, EOH came up with a trading update. Mm. The stock's down almost 7%, 5 Rand. I mean, it was 3 Rand just a few months ago. I actually thought the numbers, hands up, I've got no exposure to this, I don't own the share. I'm just commenting on the fact that I thought the numbers were actually quite good. They were cash flow positive. And for the quarter, which I thought, given Mr. Van Collier is trying to turn this business around, I thought they were pretty decent. So maybe I'm surprised. They were actually up about, I think they're up about 6-7% on the open and yesterday. So they're giving
they
a bit of back
13%
today.
Yesterday.
Mm. Were they? Okay, so
yeah,
13%.
Well.
But yeah, so I just thought that, you know, maybe we don't talk about the smaller tech companies, and I think these guys have had a lot of bad press, as we know. But I thought, so that's a little shout out. As I say, I've got no exposure to them, but I thought the numbers were actually quite impressive.
Speaking about shout outs, Donald J. Trump an hour ago sent the following. This is the this is the President of the United States of America. Oh, he says the following: support Patio Pizza and its wonderful owner, Guy.
Are you kidding?
Kelly Jury,
say that.
In St. James, Long Island. Great pizza. I'll say it again.
This one must have hijacked the POTUS handle, though, or something.
Support Patio Pizza and its wonderful owner. In St. James, Long Island. Great pizza. He's just said it. This is the man that has tins of beans in the Oval Office and says this is a great Mexican food company. I'm sure it is a great company, but for goodness' sake. But the more serious one now, listen to this. This is the serious one. And David, we've spoken about this before, and it says the following. This was 2 hours ago. It says here, and this is from DJT. With universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good in brackets, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. ~? So it's starting. He's trying to scupper the election because he's so far down in the polls. Mm. And this is a disgrace.
But why is it going to be fraudulent?
Because of voting by post. I don't know what it is. Yes. But this is what I said to you guys, the clever guys at BCA put that note out at the start of this week. They said this is a concern.
It is a concern. Yeah. He's going to scupper the democratic process. I don't know on what legal basis he has to put this. This is just unbelievable, David. I mean, you know more about the Constitution than we do.
You can't. The one thing you never stop is the election. Maybe in warfare or something. I don't even think in those conditions they delay it. Every 4 years, you have the election. Not like the Westminster system where, you know, you can call an election.
Mm.
But I must tell you something funny, because last night they were going at Zuckerberg, you know, who's they were going over him over certain issues that occurred, and he said to this Republican senator, "That's Twitter. That's not us. You know, that's we're Facebook. That's Twitter." He'd got everything mixed up. He was
Listen, what about speaking of shout-outs? What about the Lindsay Williams High Beta Hedge Fund? You've had quite a good day today, haven't you? Do you want to run through some numbers?
Okay, go for the Nasdaq. I mean, I'm around about break even on the Nasdaq, I think.
You're breaking up the Nasdaq. Your Facebook, I don't know where you're in it. You're a little bit out of the money, but that's down 0.25% now. Ten-year 2030 government bond on South Africa is closed at 9.295.
Okay, so I'm 4 points out the money there. So at the moment, I'm slightly down.
But the big one with this risk off day, the VIX, the volatility index, currently up 13% on the day.
Yeah.
26.75.
Yes, but I'm long at 27.8 or something. So I'm down on all four of my positions, but they're clawing their way back, and I can tell you that I'll be in the Bahamas in 6 months' time. Phoning you two chumps from there. Give us the closing indices, please, Nick.
Closing interviews from this chump. All right, so we've got JSE All Share today, Yeah, it wasn't a great day in the office, unfortunately. Down 1.52%, 862 points in the red, 55,844. Top 40 tradable, down 1.5%, 51,451. And if we drill down to different indices, there wasn't much in the red. Sorry, it wasn't much in the green. Rand hedges, I guess, we only play. Utilities up 1.21, the likes of British American Tobacco up 1.15%. But on the downside, technology shares down 0.5%, industrials down 1.4%, base materials down 1.5%, healthcare down 2.2%, and with this weaker rand, as expected, financials the biggest loser on the day, down 2.83%. And value traded, I'm surprised wasn't higher, actually. I had to do a double check. 19.6 billion, I wonder where everyone was.
I think a lot of people are on holiday, from what I hear, because when I try and get interviews, people people are not there, or they're saying, I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Is it school holidays in South Africa at the moment? No?
It has been for a long time.
Of course it is. Yeah, they're not back at school. I forgot about that. Yeah, cool. Anyway, people have taken a break. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. David Shapiro is from Sassam Securities. Nick Kunzer is from Sandlam Private Wealth. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. And those two chumps will be back with me together anyway on Tuesday night. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.